We're on page 72 in God's Eternal Purpose. I have a lot of notes on this page, as you can see. Lots of notes. The next two pages, there's a tremendous amount of information that I'm going to try to share with you. This class has made me extremely exciting. I'm going to bring stuff to you that you cannot find anyplace else. We're going to go from the Hebrew language. We're going to play with that. We're going to go from ancient history and study a lot of little things here, little things that you would not otherwise know. There's a lot of cross references that I made here, and I'm going to read to you some of these little notes that I made so many years ago. They're all over these pages. There is therefore recognized, James Orr said, in Scripture, a national and universal kingdom or dominion of God embracing all objects, persons, and events, all doings of individuals and nations, all operations and changes of nature and history, absolutely without exception. That includes the nation of Israel. God always, the world is centered on Israel. That's simple as that. Israel is God's, the apple of God's eye. Even though they are totally out of his, what we call out of his dominion today, as far as they're concerned, they don't want to have anything to do with the Jesus of the Bible. But God still is leading them. He dispersed them during this period of time right here. After the cross, they were dispersed. They were going out into the world. They went everywhere. They were sold as slaves so cheap that sometimes they wouldn't feed them. You worked them until they died of starvation because it was cheaper to buy another one than feed them. Now, can you imagine that? They were sold and dispersed throughout all the world. Another writer once said that the devil is not going to outdo God in any way. There will be more people in heaven than there will be on hell. Muhammad, in his demented idea, said that God was going to absolute fill hell with humans and demons. He's going to fill hell with humans and demons. God's purpose is not to fill hell with one person. I want you to understand that. God's purpose is not to put one man in hell, because Jesus Christ died for all men. All man. Whether they come to him or not, if they come to him, then the atonement is efficacious. If they don't, it's sufficient. But not efficacious. On down here a little bit further. It says, God's order in his kingdom embraces all realms, including the setting up and tearing down of nations. He does not do this for the mere pleasure of showing his power, but so orders providence that his will may be accomplished among the nations. I've said this before. How many of you studied Western civilization a little bit? How about World War II? Some of you a little bit. We had probably the greatest president in history over the United States during that period of time. Franklin Roosevelt. A brilliant, brilliant genius of a man. A brilliant politician. The more I study about his life, the bigger that I see that he was. A lot of people don't like him today because of his ideas and everything, but I'm going to tell you something. America would not be America today without him. He built America. He built America. He went on his cousin Theodore Roosevelt's premises. All he did was just follow what Theodore Roosevelt did. But the world got into a war at that time with Germany, didn't they? And Japan was flexing its muscles. Well, Franklin Roosevelt set back. Europe was giving all types of volunteers. Every nation in Europe was volunteering to go into Hitler's war. That's what we call his SS Waffen troops, and you've heard me speak about this before, and I think you've read it. You went and checked me out, didn't you, Brother Roger? This is true. He had all of these volunteer foreign legion that went and joined him because Russia was communist. Now, this let me just say a few things about this. This is fantastic. What we call in civilization of the world and the social structure of mankind, this period of time is absolutely gigantic what's taking place. Because God's going to put Israel back in the land through all of this. Where were many of the Jews? In Russia and Germany. The Germans were killing the Jews and running them off because the Jews were socialists or communists. Okay? Hitler hated communism. Communism tried to get a foot into Germany and he ran it off. And he started his thousand-year reign of Reich. Okay? Well, they went to Russia. Stalin was absolutely what we call cleansing his whole country with anybody that did not follow his ideas. He was killing them. All of his people, warriors and generals from World War I, he completely killed them all. Genocide with them. The Jews that were in Russia, they were socialist, what we call communist. Many of them were being beat up there too. There was one woman that her brother was in the land of Israel, and he rewired her and said, come. She had been in prison for her ideas. What Russia's, I mean, they didn't want any of these Jews having the ideas. They were going to build build kibbutz there and have a nation there. So she went to Palestine. And in Palestine, they established these kibbutz, which were total communist in what they were. The communists in Russia went to Jews went to Palestine and they practiced what they believed in Russia, which Russia was going to practice. Russia failed. But Europe was scared to death because Russia was going to take over the world. Do you see the economy of God here? Do you see how? Maybe this is more than you can understand right now. But Russia was going to take over the world. Franklin Roosevelt sat back and watched Germany go into Russia and almost wipe them totally out. And by the way, Russia is part of the Western Bloc at this time. They're going to fight against Germany. And the Irish in America would not go to World War II at all. They didn't want to go to World War I because England was involved, and the English don't like, I mean, the Irish hate the English. They hate them, especially the Irish Catholics. So, Franklin Roosevelt couldn't get us into the war. He started really backing Churchill, sending all kinds of stuff. First of all, he sold him anything, and then he sold it on, gave it to him on credit. And then he loaned it to him. I mean, just one thing after another, he was trying to support so England would not fall. He didn't want England to fall, but he didn't want Russia to be strong enough to turn right around and whoop the world. So he allowed Germany to go in there. They said it would take less than 6 weeks for Germany to go in and completely wipe out Russia. They had the war machines. Russia, half of their, you know, most of the warriors, most of their generals were killed by Stalin. So he had to start all over again with his communist idea. Anybody that didn't believe like him was a dead man. That's just the way it was. Well, he sat back and sat back and sat back, and finally Russia lost millions of people. And finally, he knew that Japan was going to bomb Pearl Harbor, but he let it happen. He let it happen. He allowed it to happen. Because he knew that if Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, that he'd have an excuse to get into the war with Japan. And old Khrushchev saying, quit it, quit it, quit it. We don't need to fight them too. Leave them alone. But once Japan bombed Pearl Harbor and he declared war on Japan, then Hitler declared war on us and we were in the war. And all of that waiting back, finally, when Russia went in and we took Berlin with Russia, when the Russians got Berlin, they turned around and started firing on American troops. Now we have the Cold War started before World War II is even over. Russia was going to do this. She was going to take over the world. And some of those Russian SS Waffen, his foreign legion, they fought to the last man because they didn't want Russia taking over Europe with communism. Look what happened anyway. Do you think old Franklin Roosevelt Do you see how smart he was and what he did now? That was quite a logic that he was using. But all of this is within this. Do you understand that? Within this. God allowed that man to be elected four times in the United States to bring about what he did. He allowed Hitler to come on. He allowed Stalin to come on. Stalin came along to run Israel back to Palestine. Do you understand that? They got the ideas, the way that they built Palestine was through communism. Those kibbutz, those people gave generations of their life without any personal income at all to build that nation. Do you realize what happened here with God's, what we call his permissive will, and yet his eternal purpose? Now that's just a little bit in history. I don't know, maybe it went over your head, maybe it did not, but I'm telling you, that is wonderful. I see the hand of God and everything. Have you seen the hand of God in your life? Some of you have pretty young lives. How did you get where you are, Emma? How did you get here today? How did you get here today? How did you get here today? You see how God can touch your life, touch generations of people? He increases the nations and destroys them. He enlarges the nations and straightens them again. Job 12:23. That's the oldest book in the Bible, by the way, Job. Let every soul be subject unto higher powers. There is no power but of God, and the powers that are ordained of God. Now, I wrote a little translation of that someplace here. Let be subject every living soul to the superior authorities, for naught is authority except by under God. Moreover, the existing ones, having been ordained, are by under of God. Everything that comes about in this world is in God's plan. God, not everything that happens in our lives is God's plan for our lives. God has plans for your life. Sometimes you can see it, and sometimes they just scrambled like you threw them in one of these mixers. What do you call those things you put stuff in and turn it on? Blender. Our life just goes into a blender. But God can pour it back out, and it can come back together again. Like the resurrection, the Anastasia.
Like the Terminator.
Huh?
Like the Terminator.
Yeah. I don't know anything about those things. We have three races of man. The Mongoloid, the Caucasoid, and the Negroid are Ham, Shem, and Japheth. After the Tower of Babel, Genesis 11. Now you can go into page 48 of Eternity to Eternity by Eric Sauer, which is around here someplace. Right here. And you can read more about that if you want to do this. So I'm letting you cross-reference if you want to read a little bit more about this. The races of man. After the power of Babel in Genesis 11, the shame of Noah, climaxed by his sin of Ham, and definite pattern for the races appears in the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and they became the representatives of the heads of the races. Now let me tell you this. When you think about Shem, I want you to think spirit. 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 What was Shem's whole design in the human race? What was it, Brother Ray? Shem was to do what? What's Shem mean there, Chris?
He was the spiritual leader.
Name or monument.
Yeah.
Through Shem, God would be brought. The announcement of the cross, all the spiritual things in the world would come through Shem. And then we have Ham. All of the inventions and all of the expansions and all of the medicines, everything that was ever designed in this world would come through Ham. All great nations will come through the Hamite race. And then the Japhethite means spreading. Now, if you go back to Genesis, the 9th chapter, I'm going to read this to you. 9:25. And he said, cursed be Canaan. Now, that's Canaan. Now, we're not talking about Ham here. A servant of servants he shall be to his brothers. And he also said, blessed be the Lord God of Shem. Let Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth. Now the Hamites would go out. Their languages were diversely confused more than any people on the face of earth, more than any race of people. But these people are the Chinese, the American Indians, the Egyptians. These are the greatest societies of all of mankind. The greatest societies. The greatest contributors to into the food chain, everything, were by the Hamites. Not the Shemites. What were the Shemites? Spiritual. God blessed them in many ways, but they were supposed to be the heads of the spiritual line. So we have spirit, and now we have body, physical, physis, what we call the physical from the Greek language, phys, okay? Ham, the line of Ham, are the strongest of all the people, the strongest of all the people. And then we have Japheth. And there we have mind and soul in Japheth. The Japhethites would take the Hamite inventions and they would improve upon them and they would conquer the world. It said, may enlarge Japheth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem. Right there is when Japheth will take over the gospel and carry it to the uttermost parts of the world. All of these great writers that we're talking about here, these are Japhethites. They contributed more to the gospel spreading than Israel ever did. Israel tried to squelch the spreading of the gospel, didn't they? So God set them aside for a while. Let him dwell in tents of Shem and let Canaan be his servant. Now right there is where we have the idea from all the Japheth Anglo-Saxon people that all the Hamites are supposed to be slaves to them. Okay, that's the idea. And they followed, they followed into their civilizations, whether it was in America, whether it was in Australia, New Zealand, down in the South Pacific, wherever they went and took over those civilizations and forbid them to speak their languages, didn't they? And they supplanted it with basically English language, wherever they went. God could not trust in one race all of those attributes. Did you know that? God could not trust in one race all of those attributes. For many, many years, he could not trust one race with all those attributes. That's also a gift. And that's also what we call a putting barriers up. Still on page 72 at the bottom, Noah's blessing and curse upon his sons seemed to form a prophetic background for the subsequent history of the nations. The confusion of the language at Babel seems also to have been accompanied by a confusion of thought. Now, there's a book that I have by author Cease Custance, and it's Noah's Three Sons, and it tells you about all of this in that book. Wonderful. Wonderful. If you want to go on and read that. Eric Sauer, which is the writer of this book, and a whole set of these books from eternity to eternity, this is a Japhethite. Okay. Eric Sauer expresses it thus: the origin of the language in which Adam in paradise had named all the animals, Genesis 2 and 20, was as it were a great mirror in which the whole of nature was accurately reflected. But now God shattered that mirror and each people retained only a fragment of it. The one a larger, the other a smaller piece. Now, each people sees only the piece of the whole. Do you realize after this period of time? This is after that when Noah was born, then what? Ham, Shem, and Japheth will people the world. But never the whole complete. Therefore, also the conceptions of the nations in reference to religion and philosophy and art and science and history vary so strongly from one another and indeed often amount to a mutual contradiction of things. It was through the sons of Shem that a people came whom God chose to be his national people. God has only had one nation. It is not America. So sadly to speak, it's not America. It's what? Israel. That's his only nation. Every other nation has risen and fallen to supplant and to help support Israel. They only exist because God is going to carry that nation through, and she will be the will rule and reign as administrators of God's kingdom during that 1,000-year reign right there. We live right here. We're getting close to it, aren't we? Is that exciting? God chose to be his nation. Abraham was in this line, and he had a son named Yitzchak. Say Yitzchak. Yitzchak. Yitzchak means what? Chris?
Laughter.
What does it literally mean? What's the root?
Pleasure. Pleasure, yes.
Because Isaac lived for pleasure, didn't he? Yeah. Isaac lived for pleasure. He chose the son that he was going to bless, Esau, over what God wished. And if God hadn't made him go blind, he would have done that. So God overruled that too. See how God just twists things up? He didn't go blind for a reason, for no reason. Isaac was the father of Jacob, whom he didn't like so well. From whom came 12 sons. The 12 sons headed 12 tribes, their descendants called Israel, which God chose to be his nation. To this nation he gave laws to govern both their religious and civil life. All of God's later dealings with the nations were in relationship to Israel. You hear that? All of God's later dealings with the nations, all nations, were in relationship to Israel. What do you do with Israel? I told to tell you what, you may not like what she's doing, but you better not stand against it, stand in her way. That's all I can say to you. She may be ungodly, she may be doing all kinds of ungodly things, but don't stand in her way. That's God's people, even if they're not God's right now. That God had a purpose in the nations is seen in the covenant which he made with Abraham, Genesis 12:3, then passed on to Isaac, Genesis 26:2-4, and later transferred to Jacob, Genesis 29:9-15. This was a continuing covenant, a continuing and everlasting. The Abrahamic covenant is what we call an unconditional covenant. What does unconditional mean? Doesn't have anything to do with you, Emma. Peyton, unconditional covenant. That's the covenant of salvation. That's unconditional. You know, when you want to repent of your sins and call upon God to save your soul and you trust Jesus Christ as your Savior, you're not your own from now on. You may go out and do what anything you want to in the world, but every time you do, God's going to whack you and whack you back in line. Genesis 28:9-15. This was a continuing covenant. If there were no external, or no eternal, that is, application of the inferences, therein why the consistent renewal and reminder. In the account of the selling of Joseph into Egypt and his rise to prominence, there is another illustration, page 74, of how God carries out his purposes. It was Joseph's brethren who sold him to a band of wandering traders, Genesis 37. Now let's go to the book of Genesis, and we're going to look at some things. Genesis 37. Genesis 37 tells about how Joseph was wrangled, thrown in a well. He was sold twice before he got out of the well. Did you know that? He was sold two times before he ever took him out of the well. Judah protected him, by the way. And Judah was a rascal. Now, in 37th chapter, we see all of this taking place. We see that his brothers lie to his father and tell him he's dead. They take his coat of many colors, which is his royal emblem, that he's going to be the what?
Leader.
The leader, the head, the spiritual patriarch of the family. And they sell him into the Ishmaelites in verse 27. And then some Midianite treasures passed by, and they pulled him up. He's been sold once, now he's going to be sold twice before he ever gets out of the well. By this is not really a well. This is an outhouse. They use these old abandoned wells as outhouses where they put all the refuse. He's thrown down there with the refuse, treated like dirt, just like Jesus was. Where was Jesus supposed to be buried?
In
a dung pile. That's right. In an outhouse in a dung pile. So we see Reuben, we see Judah, all of these. Then we go to verse number 48. This is a parenthetical chapter in the Bible. A parenthetical chapter. What does a parenthetical chapter mean? When I'm parenthetically speaking, what am I doing? I'm setting aside something. This doesn't belong to this deal, but here we have, I want you to see something in great contrast. What kind of a guy was Judah? And it came about the time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hirah. And Judah saw a daughter there of the Canaanites. Now he gets married to this Canaanite.
I'm sorry, where are you at?
I'm in Genesis 38.
Oh, okay.
This Genesis 38 is a parenthetical chapter to show how bad Judah is. And why I think this is to show how bad preachers are. We're scoundrels, just like Judah. Judah is going to be through him, is going to come the Messiah. Isn't that ridiculous? From a man's standpoint, would you choose this guy to be through the Messiah to come? Would you? No. But God uses all of us sinners to bring about his purposes in the world today. He goes down through here, and God, and then Judah marries a Canaanite. And he has these children by her. She croaks on him. She dies. And he's in the meanwhile, he marries these boys. He gets this beautiful woman named Tamar, which, by the way, is probably a Shemite. He gets this beautiful one, Tamar, and she marries him to his son, and then God kills that boy. And then he takes and marries him to the other, and God kills him because they're worthless. These boys are terrible. They're scoundrels. I can tell you a whole lot about stuff in here, but we won't go into all this. We're just going to get the lesson, okay? And then it says 3 months after Judah was informed, first of all, his wife dies now, so now he's going to go to a house of prostitution. Up on this one place where they go there, there are temple prostitutes come down there and sell themselves for their gods. And he goes by there and he buys one of them, he thinks. But come find out it's his daughter-in-law that he won't give his last son to because he's afraid God's going to kill the boy. So he cohabits with her and she gets pregnant 3 months later now. That was about 3 months later that Judah was informed, your daughter-in-law, Tamar, has played the harlot. What does Tamar mean? That palm tree. Palm, tall, picturesque. Has played the harlot. Bring her out here and let us burn her alive. They're going to burn her up. He's going to want to burn her up now. And I told you a little story about, you know, when he was going to pay her for her services. He doesn't have anything to pay her with right then, so he gives her his belt and he gives her his staff, which got the whole lineage of the family on it, and the belt has the same thing. And what else did he give her? Her signet ring, where everything is pressed into clay or whatever. That's his signature. Now, this is what happens. She gets pregnant. She is going to have twins. It was while she was brought out that she sent to her father-in-law saying, I am with child by the man to whom these things belong. And please examine and see whose signet ring and cords and staff these are. Now let's see what he says. And Judah recognized them and said, she is more righteous than I am, as much that as I did not give her to my son, Shelah. And he did not have relationship with her again. And it came about the time she was given birth that, behold, there were twins in her room. Look at this again now. We see this over and over and over in the Bible. Moreover, it took place while she was giving birth. One put out his hand, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying, this is the one that came out first. Sound like Esau and Jacob? Mm-hmm. But again, it came about as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out, and she said, what a breach you have taken for yourself. And she named himself Perez. Guess who the Messiah comes through? Mm-hmm. Perez. He outran his brother, didn't he? His brother's hand came out first, but then he comes out first. And afterward, his brother came out and had the scarlet thread on his hand. And this is what we have, the rejection of the firstborn. When you're born the first time in this world, you are rejected by God. You must be born again. And now we have the 39th chapter. We see the ridiculous, promiscuous infidelity of Judah. And then we go to Joseph. Let's look at Joseph. We have a total contrast here that is completely different than anything else. So Joseph had been taken down to Egypt and Potiphar. Let me read this to you from Hebrew. By the way, here is a this is a historical book. It is not inspired, but it goes back all the way to Genesis and Exodus, and it tells a lot about this story we're talking about right now. We get a lot of evidence, historical evidence, that you're not going to get anyplace else. The names of Jannes and Jambres that Paul writes down in 2 Timothy, the third chapter, he gets from this book. This is where it comes from. A lot of things come from this book. So, and here is the story right here. There's Potiphar, Potiphar's wife, and it tells her name. In the Bible, it does not tell the name of many of the patriarchs and everything, but in here it tells who their names were and where they came from and how old they were when they got married to this. How, where Noah's wife came from. Naaman. It's her name. You don't find that in the Bible, but here it tells you the name and tells how old she was when he married her. Now let's go over here in Hebrew and let's look and see what it says. We Yosef, Harad Mitzrayimah. That's what it says in Hebrew. That just bear with me for a moment. Wayik Nihu Potiphar Saris Pharao Sar Hadabahomim Hatabahim Ish Mitzri Miad Hai Yish Mi Leim Asher Hori Dihu Shama. Now let's go back and see what it says. And Joseph. What does Joseph mean? To increase, to multiply. Having been brought down to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim means what? Remember? Land of red mud and canal banks. That was the irrigated land. Because these people, their civilization was much advanced over the Canaanites or anybody else. And he brought out Potiphar, a Saris, Samek, Resh, Yod, Samek. What's a Saris there, Brother Roger? It calls him what? What does it call him in the translation? Here in Hebrew, it says he's a eunuch. He's a eunuch. He's emasculated. He's a eunuch. It says something else in the translation, but here in this language, it says he's a eunuch. He's a eunuch belonging to Pharaoh. Now what this guy is the head slaughterer. He's what we call the inspector. In there, in my library in there, I have a book called The Jungle. The American, what we call the American Food and Drug Administration. Teddy Roosevelt started that after he read that book, The Jungle. He didn't believe it, but he went and checked it out, and the guy was telling the truth. And there's where we got the American Food and Drug Administration. Now, this guy is the head of the Egyptian Food and Drug Administration, right here. Somebody's always trying to kill the Pharaoh. Somebody's always trying to poison him or something. So this guy, he goes out and he makes sure that all the animals are slaughtered correctly. They say he's a chief executioner. He's the head of all the slaughtering of the animals to make sure that they're well. How would you like to buy a sick pig or a sick cow and then eat it with some kind of a bad disease that's passed on to you? So he would go and inspect all these animals. He's like the Food and Drug Administration of Egypt. And he's a eunuch because Pharaoh wouldn't trust anybody but eunuchs to be around his women. Okay? But this guy is so important that he gets a wife for what we call decoration. For decoration. Basically for decoration. In Genesis 39 and verse 7, now the book of Jasher tells what her name is. Her name is Zuleika. Zuleika means brilliant. It means lovely. In Arabic, it means beautiful. Zuleika. Well, Zuleika is a beautiful woman. But she's just for decoration in the house of Potiphar. So now let's look and see what happens here. The officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, we see the officer there means the eunuch of Pharaoh. The captain of the bodyguard, this is all not translated correctly. We have the head of the USDA, Department of Agriculture. We have the guy that is going to check all of these animals out before they're slaughtered and before they're eaten. And the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And how the Lord caused all that he had to prosper. What does Joseph's name mean? To increase and to prosper and to multiply. So Joseph found favor in the sight and became his personal servant. And he made him overseer over his whole house and all that he owned in the charge. And it came about from that time on that he made him overseer in the house and that all that he owned. And the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house because of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned to Joseph's charge, and with him and around he did not concern himself about anything except the food which he ate. Who took care of the food which he ate? Potiphar, the head butcher, the food inspector. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came about after these events that his master's wife looked upon him with desire, and she said, "Come and lie with me." Now, she has a husband, but she really has no husband. So she's really infatuated with Joseph. She just falls head over heels in love with Joseph. But he refused. He kept on refusing. And he said to his master, "Wife, behold, with me around, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. He has put all things that he owns in my charge. And there is not one greater in the house than I. And he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then should I do this great evil and sin against God?" And it came about as he spoke to Joseph day after day, as she spoke to Joseph day after day, that he did not listen to her. He kept on not listening to her, to lie beside her and be with her. Now it happened that one day he went into the house and to his work, and none of the men in the household was there inside. And she caught him by the garment, "Come and lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. And she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside. And she called to the men of the household and said to them, "See, he has brought this Hebrew to us to make sport of us. And he came into me to lie with me, and I screamed." This is totally a lie, isn't it? She's mad. She's mad at him. And he left his garment. He's mad. Now what happens? What happened in the previous chapter? We see how bad Judah is, and we're going to see how good Joseph is. Now, Judah, when he was looking for a woman, wasn't he? He was out looking for one. Joseph went into Egypt not looking for a woman. Now, they could be pretty women, you know, down in Egypt, like Emma there and Peyton. Beautiful woman all over the place. But he wasn't interested in them, was he? He's just doing his job. And Satan gets in there and gets in this woman and drives her after him with a tremendous passion. And Joseph does what? He goes the other way. He still takes heed to what he's there for. And he will not humiliate his master. So that's the whole story there in Genesis 37. We have a contrast between Judah and we have a contrast between Joseph. Joseph is a type of what in the Bible?
Jesus.
He's a type of Jesus. In 70 different ways, he was a type of Christ. In page number 74, the Midianites took him to Egypt, where he was sold to Potiphar, the Pharaoh's... Pharaoh's what? His chief meat inspector. So Joseph said, "For God did not send me before you... He said he did send me before you to preserve life." Genesis 45 and verse 5. In Egypt, Joseph was a faithful servant, but landed in prison because of the lying, false-hearted... What's her name? Zulika. Which means what? Zulika. What does Zulika mean? You remember?
Beautiful.
Lovely. Smart. Intelligent. That's what she was. And after many years in prison, God caused him to be brought out and given honors and raised into position second only to Pharaoh in Egypt. Actually, he was over Pharaoh in all reality because Pharaoh didn't do anything without asking Joseph. Except for the grace of God and his purpose with the nation represented in Joseph, the rise to fame in Egypt could never have been happened. How marvelously illustrated is the providence of God. Do you see how God works? You looked in the modern times, we talked about Russia, we talked about Germany, we talked about America. We talked about where Israel got her ideas that built the nation so quickly, and now the nation of Israel is a socialist democracy. Highest taxes in the world. Threatened, the most threatened nation that has ever been existed, and yet they're there in spite of all of this. How marvelously illustrated is the providence of God as he overrules the wicked acts of men and bends all things to his own will and purpose. God was not the author of wickedness of Joseph's brothers, nor of Judah was he. But he so timed events providentially, guiding the wandering band of Midianites so that they happened by exactly the right time. He was sold twice before he was taken out of the outhouse. From the little handful of men going down into Egypt, Genesis 46, some 70 in number, there came out of a short time later 2 million or more people. This is amazing when the hardships heaped upon them for the purpose of their destruction is considered. It is difficult to arrive at a definite figure at the actual number of years spent by this people in Egypt. Remember I told you about people has exacting chronologies? How exacting are those chronologies, Brother Roger? They're a little bit mixed up. This writer here tells you we don't know exactly the amount of years. It was 400 plus years. Actually, a number of years spent in this people in Egypt. Exodus 12:40 says it says 430 years. But when the sojourn of the forefathers of these people after Abraham entered Canaan is considered, it cuts the time down. Some authorities believe that the time would have been about 215 years. The Septuagint renders it thus, this verse thus, the sojourning of the children of their fathers, which they sojourned in the land of Canaan, in the land of Egypt. The persecution and affliction in Egypt caused this great people to cry to God, Exodus 3 and 9. Thus God began to use even wicked nations to chasten his people and bring them into submission to him. Do you see what happened in the last 150 years? God drove them out of all the nations where they were and brought them back in their own land. God could have wiped out their enemies without the many contests with Pharaoh's magicians, but he was conditioning his chosen people for higher things. He had lessons of grace and redemption to teach them, which would exalt him. His desire to be honored in man and the nation he had chosen continued unabated in his preservation of this nation. From them was to come the Redeemer in whom all his desires would be fulfilled. Moses was providentially prepared by God for the task of delivering his nation from bondage. His preparation was twofold. First, had 40 years of training in the secular things under the greatest teachers of that day in Egypt, which were the greatest minds of the world at that time. If you don't come over here to America, because they were doing the same thing in America, building the same great empires here that they were over there in Meso and South America. Exodus 2. All the wisdom of the learned men of that time was his to learn while in the king's palace. Still another 40 years were required in the school of experience with God on the backside of the desert, out there herding sheep, which are dumber than dirt. It was over this same ground that he was later to lead Israel. Thus, God's providence is seen in working out this purpose, his purpose. Now, sheep are what we call dumb, but boy, they're the most loving creatures. You can make a pet out of a sheep and nothing flat. They just love you. And they trust you, absolutely. Led as a lamb to slaughter, it says. All of those Jewish people had, on the day of Yom Kippur that week, they had to take that sheep in their house and had to love it and look at it and care for it, and then it was led to slaughter. And the sheep just went on just like he was just happy. On the Passover night, Exodus 12, Israel learned the lesson of redemption by blood. In their departure from Egypt, they learned that grace does not abandon after the hour of deliverance. The Red Sea parted for them, and God's mighty power was shown in the death of the enemy. How mightily does God work to preserve His own? John 10, 27 through 29. God's eternal purpose in the nation is seen in the giving of the law. Was there a law before the law of Moses? The law of Hammurabi. The law of Hammurabi, which very closely resembled that. How could man be fair to other men? Nations. Where do you think they got that law, by the way? Where do you think they got the law of Hammurabi? Where do you think they got it? Go back over here in human conscience after the flood. What did God do? He established human government, which requires laws, doesn't it? And He set down those laws, and the camaraderie was taken out of that law. And then we see the law of Moses, the exacting law of God, which shows forth the Messiah to come. God's eternal purpose in the nation is seen in the giving of the law. After crossing the Red Sea and launching upon the journey, Israel was filled with exultation and sang a song of praise to God. A long, hard journey lay before them, and a path they filled with many trials was to be theirs before they reached their destination. An even greater song of adoration and complete triumph shall be sung by the nations of the redeemed in eternal glory when life with all of its testings of faith has been forever left behind. Revelation 15, 2 through 4. God issued a challenge to Israel at Sinai, Exodus 19, 3 through 7, and Israel presumptuously answered God. What did they say, Brother Ray? When they read the law, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not bring false witness, and they said every time, amen, we'll do it, we'll stand behind it. How far did that word amen go to come from? Where does it come from, Chris?
It means to prop up.
Prop up. Where's it, what language does it come from?
I don't know.
Roger. Persian. And it goes into what language?
English.
Hebrew. Then it goes into Greek. And then it comes into English and it's the same word.
Same word. Yeah.
Same word. Let's finish reading this and I'm going to turn you loose. And all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. Exodus 19 and verse 8. They chose law rather than grace. However, in no sense did the covenant of law abrogate, that means take the place of, the covenant of grace that God had made with Abraham. At Sinai, Israel taught the lessons of the holiness of Jehovah, of their own sinfulness and weakness through failure, and of the goodness of Jehovah through the provision of the priesthood and sacrifice. God's turning to a particular nation, Israel, is no sense relieve the nations of their obligations to recognize Him. We will start right there this next week. Okay, thank you for your attention. Let's have a word of prayer. And you want to just listen to some prayer, brother?